are all Tren de Aragua criminals when the status is only available to people with no criminal record?
What do you think in terms of the numbers that the Trump administration is claiming, more than 100,000 people deported so far in his administration?
Yeah, those numbers seem likely incorrect. They don't fit. The Trump administration said yesterday they'd also done 110,000 arrests already. That suggests they did 70,000 arrests in the last 2 weeks. I think somebody in the administration made a mistake. But what we know is these are the numbers they want. Their goal is to ramp up deportations and arrests as quickly as they can. And if that leads to a bunch of innocent people getting swept up alongside, the message that the White House is sending is they don't care. As long as they hit their numbers, who cares who's on those planes? They just want to get them out of the country.
Federal judges ordered the Trump administration to restore funds to programs that provide legal services to unaccompanied minors, to children in immigration proceedings. 10 seconds.
Great news. Children need lawyers. No child should have to face deportation in court alone. And the Trump administration wanted to strip away federally funded lawyers that Congress set aside money for.
We're going to leave it there. Aaron Reichland Melnick, senior fellow at the American Immigration Council. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
The thrills continue here on KBOO as the Monday Sampler, starting April 14th at 2 p.m., will present throughout the rest of April episodes from The Lives of Harry Lime, starring Orson Welles.
This is a love story. But don't worry, there's action in it. Arab chieftains, international gangsters, and a buried treasure.
Tune in Mondays, starting April 14th and throughout the month at 2 p.m., as the Monday Sampler presents Orson Welles in The Lives of Harry Lime.
But essentially, this is a tale about one of the times I fell in love. I don't laugh. I'm not the first man that happened to, or the third man either.
It's The Lives of Harry Lime, starring Orson Welles, starting April 14th at 2 p.m. on the Monday Sampler, right here on KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the nonprofit Urban League of Portland, presenting its job fair Tuesday, April 8th from 11 to 3 at the Crown Plaza. The event will include career coaches and small and large businesses. More info at ulpdx.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland City Council weighs how best to take in public comment.
Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield sues the Department of Health and Human Services for abruptly ending grants to public health departments.
And we get behind-the-scenes story of what makes the Southeast Portland Workers' Tap so special.
Good evening. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025. I'm Sherry Meredith.
And I'm Nate Kapp. In January, Portland's new form of government began, a change approved by voters in 2022. Portland's 5-person city council increased to 12, and councillors elected to represent geographic districts. That change was largely driven by voter interest in improving representation at City Hall, both by expanding the number of people on council and having them speak for specific areas of the city. But since the government is so new, city leaders have not decided on the best way to hear public input. 2 weeks ago, at a city council meeting, officials considered barring public testimony on a resolution related to Zenith Energy due to time constraints. Councillors eventually voted on the Zenith measure, but not until after holding a lengthy debate on the public feedback process. The key question is whether public testimony should be heard during bi-monthly meetings of the full city council or in the newly formed council committee meetings, or both. This detail was not spelled out in the voter-approved ballot measure that described the new government structure. When and where to hear from residents is increasingly becoming a problem. In fact, councillor disagreements on this issue have dominated recent meetings, overshadowing some of the actual policy debates. Offering testimony early in the process allows the public to meaningfully influence policies, according to Jose Gamero-Georgeson, a co-chair of the Transition Committee. But councillors have yet to adopt this standard.
As one of their first decisions, the City Council decided public testimony must be heard whenever an ordinance comes for the first time to the full 12-person group. That decision gives councillors the ability to slow policy decisions with debates over public testimony. Other committee meetings have been co-opted by debate over whether or not public testimony is required. Part of the problem is the limited time councillors have for each meeting. At a recent Labor and Workforce Development Committee meeting, a time crunch led councillors to cut how long people could testify from 3 minutes to 2. But squeezing public comments into every type of council meeting can push meetings over their schedules. What's also new is the sheer volume of meetings due to the biweekly committee schedule. Instead of running around 5 meetings a month, as was the standard in the past, council clerk staff are now expected to work around 18 meetings. And some councillors have proposed adding meetings to make time for additional public testimony. Dan Handelman, a public accountability advocate who has decades of experience testifying before city council, said, quote, "From the public's point of view, it's really not clear what stage we're supposed to sign up to speak or get involved. Where do they want us to be heard? Where do they want us to be heard? It's confusing," end quote.
Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield sues the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. for abruptly cutting public health grants to states. 23 states joined in this lawsuit, and the total amount of grants cut is nearly $12 billion. State health agencies rely on those dollars for things like managing infectious diseases, preparing for emergencies, and providing mental health and substance abuse treatment. It's also a critical time to lose funding without much explanation. Bird flu and measles are both having ongoing outbreaks in the U.S. The money in question was first authorized during the pandemic to help support local public health agencies. Kennedy ended the grants on March 24th, saying since the pandemic was over, the grants weren't needed anymore. Rayfield said in a statement, quote, "This reckless termination of billions of dollars in grants is not just an attack on the states, it's an assault on the well-being of every American. We can't stand idly by while the very foundation of our public health system is dismantled," end quote. The states in the lawsuit are seeking a temporary restraining order to stop the grants from being cut off to states.
Advocates for the rights of incarcerated people say they won't give up on legislation known as the Act for Civic Engagement. That's been stuck in committee in Olympia. The bill would guarantee that people in prison and other state institutions have the opportunity to participate in civic life. Isabel Charlet has more on this story.
A bill known as the Act for Civil Engagement did not make it out of committee in Olympia before the deadline, but advocates for people who are incarcerated say they are not giving up. The act would ensure people in Washington prisons and other facilities are able to form political organizations, communicate with community groups and elected officials, and access spaces for meetings. Karen Pesce was formerly incarcerated and now works with the advocacy group I Did the Time. She says when people behind bars are able to stay engaged in politics in their communities, it reduces recidivism.
They feel like they're a bigger part of society and an important part of society because they're helping to make it better.
Backers of the bill say more incarcerated people have submitted virtual testimony in Olympia since the pandemic, but the process could be more accessible. Pesce says people are being punished for doing political work from prison, and the bill would prevent such retaliation. The Washington Department of Correction says implementing the bill would have cost more than $26 million and require over 100 more employees, rendering it too expensive. Pesce says the DOC already has the infrastructure in place for people in prison to communicate online with politicians and organizations. She thinks the bill would have been important for the mental health of people in custody.
You need to keep active. You need to keep your mind engaged. That's what creates a lesser evil within the prison.
Supporters of the bill say it follows other legislation that passed in Olympia last year. The Nothing About Us Without Us Act guarantees that legislative groups would include at least three people with direct lived experience of the issue they are working on. Pesce notes many incarcerated individuals have been part of the foster system or experienced abuse or a lack of support, giving them valuable insights into improving systems to reduce crime rates. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
The Trump administration continues to use semantics to defend their actions. They contended that the text chain about attacks in Syria that mistakenly included an editor of The Atlantic contained no classified information. The current word wrangle is whether extending the Trump tax cuts, which expire soon and largely benefit the most wealthy, is a budget increase or just a continuation of the current budget. The traditional zero baseline used by the Congressional Budget Office is current law, which Trump's temporary tax cut is not. Republicans, through the action of the Senate Budget Committee Chair Lindsey Graham, hope to have the Budget Office accept current policy as the baseline. On Tuesday, Senator Cory Booker held the Senate floor for over 25 hours, a Senate record, to hold off all Senate action, including on the budget resolution.
Elon Musk's favorited candidate in a Wisconsin judge's race lost his election on Tuesday. Elon Musk poured over $25 million into Brad Schimmel's campaign. Instead, the Wisconsin Supreme Court seat went to liberal judge Susan Crawford. Last November, Trump won Wisconsin by less than 1%, less than a percentage point, a margin of only 29,000 votes. Wisconsin's redistricting plan will soon be considered by the state Supreme Court. Meanwhile, in Florida, Republicans held on to two congressional seats that were vacated by Trump's appointments. The Democratic candidates for those seats did substantially better than the Democrat received in last November's election.
Speaker Johnson cites constitutional limits to a third presidential term, groups plan nationwide protests against executive overreach, and U.S. Senate resolution aims to block new tariffs on Canada. With more on the story, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
There's a constitutional path. You have to amend the Constitution to do it, and that's a high bar. But I think he recognizes the constitutional limitations, and I'm not sure that there's a move about to amend the Constitution.
House Speaker Mike Johnson says President Donald Trump knows staying in office at the end of his term would require changing the Constitution, a very hard thing to do. But Trump's use of executive power continues to meet protests, with rallies planned nationwide for Saturday. Cole Dragota is with 5051 NC, which is organizing the events in North Carolina.
The majority of the people in our organization are either on Social Security or receive Medicaid or Medicare, and a lot of them are concerned that they're going to lose that.
Results are in from key races in Florida and Wisconsin. In Florida's 6th District, Republican former state senator Randy Fine won the special election for the seat that had been held by Mike Waltz, who resigned to become national security advisor. In spite of beating schoolteacher Josh Wheel by 11 points in a district that went for Trump by nearly three times that margin, Fine is voicing confidence.
I'm going to help Donald Trump get his agenda done. Look, the House majority is very small. And while Donald Trump can sign amazing executive orders and take executive actions, he needs Congress to put it into law.
In Wisconsin, turnout is high in an expensive and contentious state Supreme Court race between conservative Brad Schimmel and progressive Susan Crawford. Billionaire and presidential advisor Elon Musk's $22 million donation to Schimmel has drawn national attention and sparked a people versus Musk pushback from Democrats. The contests are seen as early signals ahead of the 2026 midterms. Meanwhile, students are raising alarms over what they call threats to academic freedom and free speech. Students in New Hampshire are protesting the detainment of Romesa Ozturk, a Tufts University doctoral candidate arrested last week by masked immigration agents. Ozturk, who held a student visa, is now in an out-of-state detention facility. University of New Hampshire grad student Stephanie Black with the Palestine Solidarity Coalition says her group wants the university to declare itself a sanctuary for migrants.
It's an alarming pattern in which students are being targeted simply for exercising their First Amendment rights, and it's a direct attack on academic freedom.
Tension is building in Congress over trade policy. Several Democrats in the Senate are backing a resolution to block new Trump tariffs on Canadian goods. They argue the tariffs benefit billionaires at the expense of small business owners. Lawmakers pressed the nominee for chair of the Joint Chiefs about Signalgate at a confirmation hearing. When asked about the leaked Signal Group chat discussing Yemen airstrikes, Lieutenant General John Kane replied that he always uses proper secured channels for communication. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden about his latest reporting on homelessness policy in Grants Pass. Then we'll hear the latest arts news with Oregon Arts Watch. At 6, it's Alternative Radio. And then at 7, the Global Sale with KT Katura. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 43 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy too with a high of 56. Today in history, in 1902, the Electric Theater opens in Los Angeles. It's the first full-time movie theater in the U.S. The quote of the day is from French novelist Emily Zola, who said, quote, "I am little concerned with beauty or perfection. I don't care for the great centuries. All I care about is life struggle intensity. I am at ease in my generation."
Foster kids in Alaska could see extra protections in the future thanks to a bill passed by their state house. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Alaska State House has passed a bill that would help protect foster kids from unnecessary stays in acute psychiatric care facilities. It's likely to become law, and if so, kids will have the right to a court hearing within 7 days of entering a facility to determine if the placement is necessary. Almost 70% of foster kids in the state are Alaska Native or American Indian. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more.
Tali Stone was 9 years old when her foster mother brought her to North Star, an acute psychiatric facility in Anchorage. Stone says during the intake, her foster mom exaggerated her behavior.
Even the staff said themselves, "I'm not sure why you're here." And I was like, "I'm not sure either."
Stone was at North Star for 4 weeks, according to her psychiatric records. and over the next 2 years, she was admitted to North Star a total of 4 times. Stone is one of the thousands of kids under the care of the Office of Children's Services in Alaska, or OCS, who have spent time, sometimes unnecessarily, in acute psychiatric facilities. OCS is under-resourced with a high staff turnover rate and a serious shortage of foster families. But Amanda Metivier, who runs the nonprofit Facing Foster Care, says that lack of placements means foster kids stay in psychiatric facilities for too long.
They do an intake at a hospital, they get a diagnosis, and then they linger there.
Right now, kids have the right to a court hearing within 30 days of admittance, but the bill would reduce that timeline to 7 days. At the hearing, all people invested in the kids' care would have to be there. Birth parents, foster families, tribes, behavioral health providers, and OCS. Every kid over 10 would also have their own lawyer who could advocate for them being in the least restrictive setting appropriate. State Representative Andrew Gray sponsored the bill.
The absolute human rights violation of having your freedoms completely taken away and no one coming to help you, that alone is enough that we have to fix it.
Metivier worked with kids in foster care to help draft the bill. She says it would add a sense of urgency to the process of assessing the care.
We need to act quickly on either identifying a higher level of care or releasing them.
Tali Stone says she never got a hearing at all to assess whether she should be there. She says she really hopes this bill passes. She wants foster kids in institutions to know they're not forgotten. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
The U.S. Department of Justice on Tuesday announced increased resources to Indian Country to investigate violent crimes, including related to missing and murdered Indigenous people. According to the department, the FBI will send 60 personnel to temporary assignments over 6 months to support 10 field offices, including in Albuquerque, Denver, Phoenix, Portland, and Seattle. The FBI will work with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and tribal law enforcement. The personnel will work with the BIA's Missing and Murdered Unit. In a statement, Attorney General Pam Bondi said crime rates in American Indian and Alaska Native communities are unacceptably high. She says by surging FBI resources and collaborating closely with U.S. attorneys and tribal law enforcement to prosecute cases, the DOJ will help deliver accountability these communities deserve. According to the Department of Justice, at the beginning of fiscal year 2025, the FBI's Indian Country program had about 4,300 open investigations. That includes death investigations, child abuse, domestic violence, and sexual abuse investigations. U.S. Senators Lisa Murkowski, chair of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, and Brian Schatz, vice chair, are leading a hearing Wednesday on Indian education. The hearing in Washington, D.C. will examine federal programs. Witnesses include leaders of the National Indian Education Association and the American Indian Higher Education Consortium. Educators in Indian Country and tribal leaders are among those who've been raising concerns about Indian education under Trump administration policies. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Workers Tap is a beer bar and cafe in Southeast Portland. It's worker-owned and operated and has created a place for communities to organize. KBOO's Hannah Francis speaks with one of the co-founders to learn more about Workers Tap.
With recent changes in immigration laws and deportation policies, threats to trans and queer gender-affirming care, as well as simple recognition, the lessening of reproductive rights, defunding of climate protections, and an onslaught of daily atrocities in national and international politics, many Americans are feeling called to organize community and create connections to help keep one another safe on a local level. In Portland, many have found a home at the Workers' Tap, a local cafe and bar that opened in spring of 2022.
It was really born out of activist and union organizing, and still, like, that is what kind of drives us, is like the free meeting space.
That is Connor, one of the original founders and a current co-owner of the Workers Tap. Four friends and members of Portland DSA founded the bar to provide a third space to meet and organize with friends, coworkers, and community members in a time when those places are especially needed.
I joined DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, in 2016 after the November election. So I was mostly doing that. And then, like, DSA was exploding in growth throughout, like, 2016, 17, 18. And, you know, I think there was a certain point where it was like, hey, there are like 2 meetings, Portland DSA meetings a week, and we can't figure out where to put them. And so that was really what motivated me to find a space, because I knew just DSA alone plus other organizations, we could pack the place.
The TAP found its home in a 1904 Victorian house on the corner of Ankeny and 12th. The upstairs bedrooms have been repurposed into meeting rooms, and there is even a small library on the second floor. Unions and community members can rent the upstairs meeting rooms for free, and sometimes the basement floor opens up for special events. The TAP has also started a strike fund for workers and unions bargaining for a better working conditions.
We just recently started a strike fund for local unions, particularly the ones that don't have like big union ties yet, because those ones already have access to funds. But first Saturday of the month, we have a 10% of our sales for the day go to the strike fund. And then also we take direct donations to it as well. And then when a union goes on strike in Portland, we are able to just, you know, donate money right away. And then, you know, we're happy to do that. That's kind of our mission.
The Workers' Tap originally opened as a beer bar, but has recently made the transition to being a cafe as well. They adjusted their hours to 9 a.m. to midnight daily in hopes to make the space more accessible to all throughout the day.
So since we've opened the cafe portion, I've had kind of this larger scheme, so to speak, right? A program that I wanted to put on. And it's kind of in two pieces, right? I think that one of the bigger things that I wanted to do was kind of go above and beyond what people consider like ethical trade practices with coffee, especially on my sourcing.
The coffee program was a recent addition to the TAP. They hired on Gil, or Gilberto Dominguez, early in 2024. He's a coffee specialist and has been in the industry for 10 years.
A lot of the coffee producers that I work with and who roast our beans are people who have direct connections. Either they're members of the agricultural cooperatives from the coffee farms, or their families are the people who own and work at the farms in the countries that they're from. Hector at Café Zamora, who's very well known in the Portland scene, and the Diaz family from Proyecto Diaz in the San Francisco Bay Area. Are two names that I can come up with already that do a lot of work on that front. So my hope is, right, as this program moves forward, we can start showcasing more people who have direct connections to the people who are doing that work, right? And kind of eliminating the need to necessarily place a label like fair trade or something, because it's like we're doing the most we can. The second part of what I want to see is, and there's a talk all around town about, and the nation really, about like revitalizing third spaces. We are a place that is very, very out and loud. You know, we say it with our chest. We're a community space. We're very transparent about what we stand for and what we believe in. And we invite people who share those values to come into the space freely. And I think that we're in a unique position where it's kind of like the bar is able to support itself, right? And so the coffee program and the space is able to be open and utilized by people. And I kind of want to just like ramp that up, right? Make this a place where people can come and be comfortable and hang out and sit for as long as they like, you know, as well as being an important space for organizing.
The Workers' Tap is open from 9 a.m. to midnight every day. They're also currently in search of a new food cart that might be interested in selling food in their back patio. To visit them in person, you can go to their location at 12th and Ankeny in Southeast Portland, or you can email them online at workerstap@gmail.com. Reporting for KBOO, I'm Hannah Francis.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wonders if every day this month will be April Fool's.
Since personnel costs are only 4% of the federal budget, laying off hundreds of thousands of workers isn't intended to save money, but to cripple government services and sell off what parts have value. It's the same playbook as a hostile takeover, just as tariffs are more taxes on us Americans. Who's fooling who? Is a government by fools called an idiocracy? What else does Donnie have in his toolbox other than threats and lies? Once the U.S. economy starts to down spiral, there's no reason for the rest of the world to put up with his crap, his disrespect and bluster. Canada's already breaking things off. Who's next? Couldn't be any good Trump April Fool jokes because he does the unbelievable daily. Maybe if I said he did something compassionate or well thought out or biggest impossibility that he admitted a mistake. Maybe just a few patriotic Republicans in D.C. and some regular folks who voted for him will help the rest of us end this no joke of a presidency. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Josh Salem, and Hannah Francis. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Santiago Ortega. Special thanks goes to Isabel Charlet, Antonio Gonzalez, and Farah Siddiqui. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I am Sherry Meredith.
And I'm Nate Kapp. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined by Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street